Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Sunday, as if you do not already know, is Father's Day. And there's a lot of cultural chatter about that, not nearly as much as about Mother's Day. But nonetheless, Father's Day has its place. It comes every year. And you can count on, just about this time of the year, a flurry of news and media reports having to do with fatherhood. Personal interest stories, headline stories, research, statistical analysis stories. And most of it is really very unhelpful. Some of it is just fundamentally almost untrue. At least it's unrepresentative. Bradford Wilcox is a professor of sociology at the University of Virginia. He does some of the best work debunking the myths out there, especially as they are presented about marriage and the family. And he has written an article at National Review Online today about the myths of fatherhood. And I wrote my own article, Watch Out for the Myths About Fatherhood, at my website at albertmohler.com. I'm pointing people to Brad Wilcox's article and to the very important role he plays in debunking several of these myths. He's going to be with us in just a few minutes, and we're going to hear it in his own voice as he talks about some of these myths about fatherhood that are being foisted upon the American public. Now, you can pretty much count on it 12 months a year, but especially around Father's Day. And I begin my article by talking about the problematic role of the father in the context of modern American culture. When we come back, we're going to be talking far more about that, and we're going to go right at why so much of this is now the case, and why the media tends to tell the story about hurt and harm, about absence and innovation, about single moms having kids as if that's the norm, about all kinds of things that just aren't true. And Brad Wilcox is just about better equipped than anyone else to tell us not only what isn't true, but why the media tends to think that it is. Here's a little hint. As Brad says in one of these articles, you know, the assertions they make might be true about their families, just not true about families writ large across America. We're going to be talking about the role of the family, however, not just from kind of a debunking the myths perspective, but from a biblical perspective. What is the father? Whose idea was this? And what does it mean to be without a father? Well, we have a lot of evidence about what it means to be without a father, but at my website today at albertmohler.com, I posted another article. It's my reading log dated June 19, 2009, and the theme is fathers and sons. And as I was thinking about Father's Day, I went back to talk about three memoirs written by sons. It's kind of the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I deal with the good one last. But, you know, the theme of fathers and sons has been a part of literature for a very long time. You know, Turgenev, the great Russian novel, Fathers and Sons, or Chapalyuk, who's a Fight Club, talking about these young men fighting each other, who says this is what a generation of boys raised by women looks like. Father absence, father loss that's there. And so I deal in the reading log with my experience reading three memoirs, all written by men about their fathers, or about the absence of their fathers. The first of these is J.R. Moringer's book, The Tender Bar. And it's very interesting because it's a story about a little boy who was abandoned by his father and left with his mother when he was an infant. And he found in a bar, in a neighborhood bar, the relationships he developed with men there in New York City. Even though his father ran away, these men tended to come in and hang around the bar. And here was a little boy who, as he was moving into adolescence, found himself hanging around this bar, hanging around men, and he learned what he came to learn about manhood from these men in the bar in the absence of his father. Obviously, that's one of those stories that really reaches your heart. Let me tell you, this one's going to reach it a lot more poignantly than you may think, because this little boy, J.R., grew up hearing his father's voice on the radio. His father was a prominent disc jockey in New York City. So here's a little boy who did not know his father, but he did know that that voice was his father. Can you imagine that? Here's a little boy growing up into the coming of age, into adolescence, and all his life, in the night, he turns on the radio to hear his father's voice. But his father is not speaking to him, and it's the voice of a man he's never even met. He calls it the voice. I wonder how many children... How many boys, yes, but I wonder how many children in the middle of the night long to hear that voice, the voice of an absent father. And there's a lot in this that caught my attention. I love one line. As he was talking about the men who befriended him in the bar, he said over one summer, quote, "Everything the men taught me that summer fell under the loose catch-all of confidence. They taught me the importance of confidence. That was all, but that was enough. That, I later realized, was everything," end quote. Very secular understanding of manhood there, all about confidence. But, you know, from whom is a boy going to learn that kind of confidence? The second of the memoirs that I chronicle in this reading log is the book Closing Time by Joe Queenan. If you know Joe Queenan, you know he's pretty much a bare-fisted writer, writing about many of the realities of human life and best-selling books, also in the New York Times and many magazines. In this particular memoir, he writes about his father and about his coming-of-age story growing up in Philadelphia during the 1960s. Now, he does offer some sweet reminiscences of times with his dad, including a breakneck trip in a delivery truck through the streets of Philadelphia. But most of this account is about a man who is deeply tormented by alcoholism. Joe Queenan, as he relates the story of his father, was abused both physically and mentally, both in body and soul, by a father whose presence was more often than not a terror to his family. He traces his father's decline. He writes this, quote, "My father got broken when he was young, and he never got fixed. He may have wanted to be a good father, a good husband, a good man, but he was not cut out for the job. He liked to drink, but unlike some men who liked to drink, it was the only thing he liked to do," end quote. Tragic story there. Very, very tragic story. Now, the overlap of my life chronologically is very much with Joe Queenan. We grew up about the same time, and I, in reading that memoir, was just struck by how different my life was. And in a whole new way, I'm thankful for my father and for the fact that I grew up in a very stable, wonderful, you know, Christian home. And I did not have to wonder whether my father loved me or intended good for me. Joe Queenan had to learn how to be a man from someone else other than his father. The third book I chronicle, however, is entitled Made in Detroit, a South of 8 Mile memoir. It's by a man by the name of Paul Clemens, and he writes about growing up in Detroit in a neighborhood undergoing incredible transition during the 1970s and the 1980s. 8 Mile Road, of course, is one of the very famous mile roads in Detroit, but to be south of 8 Mile was to be deep inside a blue-collar, working-class community, and it was a community that was transitioning racially and in many other ways. He writes about the demise of the city of Detroit in terms of its economic life during this period and its political life. He writes about the implosion of order in the city all around him, but he writes about his neighborhood, and he says the dads in his neighborhood, well, they were just there. They didn't divorce. They didn't leave their families. They were there. They may not have been the happiest people, but they were there. And they did what dads do. They got the job done. And they worked in factories and in assembly lines. They worked insane hours. They came home tired. And then when they got home, they did what they had to do. And he writes with a lot of affection about his dad. He makes very clear it was his dad that held the family together, that kept the family safe. And these were families whose dad showed absolute dedication to family by the fact that they gave themselves to such hard work under such difficult circumstances. More often than not, they were tired to the bone, even as they had to come home and patch a wall or discipline a son. As Paul Clemens relates, fathers in his neighborhood demonstrated a central task of manhood by doing what just had to be done. Now he writes with great skill. Listen to this segment from his book. He writes, "Families were fundamental to the way the area was organized, which is not to say that anyone spent much time getting sentimental over them as a concept. Families were viewed like most other things in this life, which is to say, as sometimes dreary and ultimately disappointing, but preferable to a long list of even less desirable alternatives. Though they cursed aloud while doing so, and internally likely cursed the days they'd wed our mothers and fathered us, the men in our neighborhood, whether in hats and gloves during the dead of winter, or sweating and swearing up a storm in the middle of the summer, somehow managed to fix broken carburetors, replace drafty windows, and keep basement furnaces going a little bit longer." It's really a testimony there to manhood. Again, it's a secular testimony. We want more than this of our fathers, and we want to be more than this as fathers. But I'll tell you, after reading those first two memoirs, it was really something of a joy to find here a memoir about a boy writing about his dad saying, when I look back at it, as a teenager, I knew my dad was holding our family together. I knew he'd be on me if I got out of line. And I knew that if something was wrong in the house, he'd come home tired and fix it. You know, the world is a much weaker place, and our families are much weaker for the absence of fathers like that. Again, we want more, but we sure don't want less. it's time to debunk some of the myths about fatherhood, and the central of these myths is that fathers are not important. We're going to be talking with W. Bradford Wilcox at the University of Virginia. Important article he just wrote, published today, on the myths about fatherhood. These aren't just matters of getting fatherhood wrong. They're about presenting ideas out there in the public square that can do great injury in the real lives, especially of families and children. We're going to be talking to Brad Wilcox when we come back. We want to talk to you as well. Give me a call at 877-893-8255. When we're talking about fathers and Father's Day, you join the conversation by calling 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, you're listening to the Albert Mohler Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. Here's a little clue for you. When you're looking at a periodical or a newspaper and you see the byline of W. Bradford Wilcox, read the article. Brad Wilcox is professor of sociology at the University of Virginia and a senior fellow at the Institute for American Values, and I could tell you a great deal about his article, Five Myths on Fathers and the Family. It became the catalyst for my own article, published today at albertmohler.com. But I want to hear, I want you to hear it from Brad Wilcox, as he's on the line with me right now. Professor Wilcox, thanks for joining us today.
It's my pleasure to be here, Dr. Mohler.
Listen, I really think your article is important today, and I think, well, number one, I'm seeing exactly what you're talking about. With Father's Day on the horizon, I've been amazed at the kind of news reports and all the rest going on out there about fatherhood. A lot of it is exactly exemplary of the kind of myths you're talking about. So I know we've got you for just a few minutes. Would you kind of trace through these myths you're warning Americans to recognize about fatherhood?
Sure. There are a couple of myths that the media tends to try around this time of year. The first of which is that Mr. Moms are sort of almost invariably, when Father's Day comes around, they profile stay-at-home dads, and I've got nothing at all against stay-at-home dads, but it's important to recognize that that's just a fraction, less than 1% of the married fathers with kids ages 15 and under in our country. Most dads in the U.S. who are married with kids are, in fact, the primary breadwinners in our country. And so we just have to recognize that, you know, the average dad is focusing a good bit of his energy on providing, and that is important for the, you know, the financial welfare of his family, of course.
Yeah, with
the second myth is that women are looking for men, for fathers, for husbands who will split things 50-50. In fact, most women who are married with children would like to work part-time or stay at home, and that means that they're not looking to split things 50-50. The third myth is that basically married and cohabiting dads can be just as successful. And that's not the case in large part because cohabiting dads are much more likely to break up with their with the mother of their children, and of course the kids suffer when that happens. The fourth myth is that the kids will be just fine when parents divorce. And there was actually an article published this week in the Atlantic Monthly chronicling the writer's recent divorce from 20 years. She really downplays the consequences of this decision for her children, and so I kind of go after that myth. And then the fifth myth is that fathers are fungible, in other words, that kids don't necessarily need a dad. And I discuss the ways in which dads bring distinctive talents to the parenting enterprise that refute that myth.
Now, Brad, I really appreciate your breakdown there, and I appreciate you joining us, even though you're in transit today. We really ask you to do that simply because of the urgency of talking about this. Let me ask you, when you consider this media onslaught, getting behind these myths, you make a point in your article at National Review about why some in the media feel compelled to try to tell the story this way.
Well, I think there are a couple of different reasons. I think sometimes journalists are lazy and they just sort of try to whatever seems kind of, you know, conventionally. I think another reason sometimes the journalists are relying upon their own experience or that of their friends, and oftentimes, frankly, they're just not representative. They live in, you know, within the Beltway or within, you know, 10 miles of Manhattan, and they just don't actually kind of get out there and sort of experience family life for all of its greatness and its terribleness now these days, and they're just not aware of what's really happening in the country as a whole. And then I think, you know, some folks are really dedicated to fostering or pushing a progressive or a feminist agenda, and they're always looking for any evidence, you know, in support of that worldview. So these are the kinds of things that I think can distort the portrait that the media presents of fatherhood, marriage, and family life in the United States.
Okay, let me try to encapsulate the theme of several of these stories. For instance, when the first myth you mentioned, the myth about the stay-at-home dad and several other of these, what I see is the art of the media trying to say fatherhood is fundamentally changing. And that's largely what we're going to talk about on the air today, just in terms of a thesis. But when they say this, I think I know some of what they mean. But let me ask you, just given your review of the landscape, I don't know anyone who looks at this data more insightfully than do you. When you look at this, is fatherhood changing?
Well, I think it is true that, you know, in some ways fatherhood is changing. I mean, dads are spending more time with their kids, you know, if of course they're married to the mother of their children, that's a big if. And, you know, they are doing more in terms of housework than they used to. But the point that I'm trying to stress, you know, in this piece is that there are a lot of continuities with the past. And that is, you know, the dads are still, as I said, taking the lead when it comes to breadwinning in most homes, even if mom is working, you know, full-time or part-time. And they're also, they're still likely to engage in a distinctive style of parenting. And that encompasses things like being a stronger disciplinarian, being more likely to challenge their kids to embrace life's challenges, and really playing with their kids in a distinctive way. They're more likely to engage in aggressive play with their children, which is actually good for their kids, as long as it sort of is kept in bounds, you know. So there are continuities here that we can identify that are consistent with, to a degree, the kinds of things that our own fathers or grandfathers would have done, you know, with their children.
Brad Wilcox is professor of sociology at the University of Virginia, and he is also associated as a fellow with the Institute for American Values. Brad, thank you so much for going to the extra effort to be with us today.
It's my pleasure, Dr. McCoy. I wish you happy Father's Day.
Thank you so much. The same to you. Folks, we now turn to you. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You've heard from Brad Wilcox, and I really do appreciate him taking the opportunity to be with us today. I saw his article this morning, and I'm going to tell you, I follow the advice I gave you. When you see an article written by Bradford Wilcox, read that article. Same thing for any book or essay. It's because here's a man who really is functioning in American academia to review all that's going on, these issues, and really try to set the record straight. And he's honest both ways. We've looked at his data and analysis on this program recurringly because he tells us things we need to hear when they're hard. But he really does a great job of coming back to say, you know, an awful lot of what's presented out there is fact, just isn't so. And sometimes it's presented with the subtlety of an editor choosing a news story and deciding to put on the front page the stay-at-home dad as if that's where America's headed. Let me just repeat the statistic that he recounts in his article. In 2008, in the census data, less than 1% of American dads in families with children was a stay-at-home dad. And that's not to deny that there are those. And America's a big country, so less than 1% can still amount to a lot of people. But that's not fairly representative of what most families are like. And then you have the fact that 74% of homes of families with children have fathers as the primary provider. And I think it's just very important from a biblical perspective to understand a man's role as provider, and the fact that that's pretty constant, regardless of the time. In my essay, The Reading Log, about these memoirs about fathers and sons, I mentioned the fact that somehow these stories of the hard things tend to get a lot more attention than someone writing an article about a good father. And the reason for that is this. Literature favors disaster over peace, conflict over calm, and in general, pain over pleasure. So that's what tends to make a story. You don't get a novel out of a happy family. As Tolstoy said, all happy families are alike, but every unhappy family is unhappy in its own way. The same thing is often true in the media. Keep this always in mind. The media puts forth the stuff that it finds more unusual than usual, but it often doesn't tell you that that's what is happening. The phone number is 877-893-8255. Let's talk about fatherhood in America in the 21st century, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The big issue we're talking about today is not just debunking the myths about fatherhood. It's important to debunk the myths, but it's also important to have a conversation about what the truth ought to be. So let me ask you this. What ought to be true about fathers? What should we be aiming for as fathers? What should we be celebrating on Father's Day? And how do we put all this into perspective? The secular world is about as confused about fatherhood as motherhood. No, I think it's much more confused about fatherhood than motherhood. I think fatherhood is a more difficult thing to explain than motherhood. You know, at my website about, just a few days ago, I mentioned Michael Lewis's memoir, Home Game, about fatherhood. And he makes a very interesting point in that particular work, because he's talking about the differences between fathers and mothers. And in doing so, when he talks about fathers, he talks about fatherhood being a learned art. He says this: maternal love may be instinctive, but paternal love is learned behavior. There's a sense in which that's true. And there's a sense in which fathers, well, put it this way, men have to work a lot harder to learn how to be a dad than women have to work at learning to be a mom. Because a lot of the tasks of motherhood are just implicit in it. Where for fatherhood, it gets a little trickier. Let's talk about fathers. The number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You can write us at mail@albertmohler.com. Twitter us. Just follow Albert Mohler or Mohler Radio and let us know what you're thinking. You know, I think one of the missing elements in all of these secular conversations about fatherhood is the recognition that fatherhood is not just some kind of biological or sociological accident. From a Christian biblical perspective, we understand that God created men to be husbands and fathers, and created fatherhood, and as he created motherhood, as indissoluble parts of what it means to have the family, starting with the marital unit of the man and the woman in a monogamous covenant relationship for a lifetime. And then, looking at the role of fathers, well, you can't read the Bible without understanding the importance of patriarchy. I mean, you can't talk about Abraham without talking about Isaac. You come to understand that important role of the fathers passing down to successive generations, good when they are righteous and evil when they are unrighteous. The number is 877-893-8255 in Louisville, Kentucky. Sanford's listening on WFIA. What are you thinking, Sanford?
Well, Dr. Mohler, I'm a stepfather right now, and I grew up in a broken home, so I didn't have a full-time father to be a role model. So I question my ability to be a good dad because I have limited experience from my parents being divorced when I was 7.
Well, what do you think that means for you now, Sanford? You know, talking to a national radio audience, first of all, I want to thank you for the generosity of sharing your own account here. But what would you want to say to dads today? What would you want a Christian dad to hear from you today?
To be there.
Yeah.
It's just important to be there because you don't want your sons to have that question of, am I doing the right thing? You know, do I want to be a mom? I mean, I'd rather be myself and know that I'm doing a good thing and that my children will grow up with the best that I could give them.
That's very sweetly said, Sanford, and I wish you a happy Father's Day, and I think just from the conversation with you, your stepchildren are very fortunate to have you. And that's another important issue here for Father's Day as we're talking about this. You know, God himself is described in one of the most precious ways in the Bible as the father of the fatherless. Isn't that sweet? I mean, that is one of the most important things that could be said of God, I think, relationally, is that he is the father to the fatherless. And one of the most important things a man can be, I think, in this generation is a father to those who know no father. And there's a sweetness in that. And there are out there a lot of adoptive fathers who deserve our highest honor. You know, you really contrast this. I mean, the norm, what we should seek for in the norm, which is to say, which should account for most children, is a faithful biological father in the home married to the biological mother. There you go. That should be the gold standard. But in a Genesis 3 world where there is death and loss and not to mention divorce, the best thing on the other side of that is the real trust in a father, an adoptive father, who can genuinely bring protection, influence, moral guidance, discipline into the life of the children in a way that, that only a dad can. Being the father to the fatherless is a very sweet thing to be said of God. It's a very honorable thing to be said of a man. Phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Join the conversation. Let me know what you're thinking. Talk to us about what you expect out of fathers and what you hope fathers will think about on Father's Day. And what do you hope others will be thinking about fatherhood on this day? It's not just about the greeting card, is it? Tell me it's not. We'll be right back.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We're talking about fatherhood in America, both in a secular perspective, as Brad Wilcox helped us to kind of debunk some of the myths out there about fatherhood that tend to recur, really bubble up to the surface just about Father's Day every year. And then from a biblical perspective, we're celebrating the fact that God gave fathers his gifts. And it's so important here we understand that, that God is Father. He refers to himself as Father. It's not merely a metaphor, it's an analogy, which is to say he names himself this. And by naming himself Father, he shows us what true fatherhood is all about. I hear people who say, I have a hard time accepting God as Father because my father was absent, abusive, you name it. Well, the reality is we must not judge God by our fathers. Instead, we must judge our fathers by God, which means as a father, we've got an incredible standard of judgment over us. Unbelievable. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. We began the program talking about some memoirs about sons and fathers in which father loss was a really poignant theme. And then we had the conversation with Brad Wilcox. Now it's to you. 877-893-8255 from Bayfield, Colorado. John's on the line. Go ahead, John.
Hi, Dr. Mohler. I was listening to your program, and I was listening to a similar program a couple of years ago, and it occurred to me, my parents were divorced when I was very young, and I was a lucky one. I had a lot of positive role influences in my life, men that took me under their wing. My oldest sister's family and husband were great to me. So I thought I was okay. I spent my whole life thinking I was okay, and I had children of my own as they were growing. And then one day the subject had come up on a radio program, and it floored me, and I realized the things that I was missing. And to kind of influence people to get that help, to leave that discussion. It wasn't discussed in my house. Nobody ever said, hey, Dad's gone. Why is he gone? Why is he interested in me? What did I do wrong? You know, it's just kind of one of those things you're left alone. And I think that you know, at least with the children, it should be discussed and reaffirm them that it's not their fault. And I was a lucky one. I was one of the lucky ones. I grew up in a great, stable environment, but still was lacking that day-to-day influence in the home.
And now you're a father, John?
Yes, I am.
Tell me about your kids.
10 and 11-year-old boy and a girl, active in music. We BMX, baseball, we're busy every night, every single night. And I was thinking about Sanford that called you earlier as a stepdad and worrying about because he didn't have a father if he was doing the right thing. I think if you're wore out at the end of the day because of activities with your children, you're probably doing okay.
You know, I think that's a profound word of wisdom, John. I want to give you a word which I hope is a gift to you. You know, you found yourself even realizing later in life what it meant to be without a dad. And that can't be replayed. That history can't be relived. But you now have the opportunity that just really kind of seeps through your voice of the joy you have of being the dad to your children. And I'll tell you this, to come back a generation after father loss and to be as kind and gracious and committed a father as you are, speaking about your children, is just a testimony of the grace and glory of God. And I pray the Lord gives you so much joy in being a father that it will compensate in ways, not to replace, but to compensate for what you did not have as a boy looking for a dad. So God bless you, John. Thank you so much for calling, and God bless you and your family, and happy Father's Day. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's talk for a moment. And I want dads to hear this message very, very clearly. You heard there in the voice of John, as you heard in the voice of Sanford, the voice of two men without fathers. I have the opportunity of talking to women from time to time who say, you know, my father was cold to me, was indifferent to me, was malevolent towards me, perhaps even was abusive to me. And now you talk to me about the love of God, our Heavenly Father. Jesus taught us to pray, our Father who art in heaven. The father issue comes up again and again and again. And fathers, do we understand that when we misfather, just an absent father implies an absent God. A violent father implies a violent God. A malevolent father implies a malevolent God. It's not just a psychological harm. It's not just a psychiatric harm. It's not just a socioeconomic, educational deficit. It is a theological injury we as fathers do to our children when we miss father. And that is a very, very scary thing. Should be for fathers. That should keep us up. Scare us at night. But it should also just remind us that there's no man who's up to this, that even as we are saved by grace, we have to parent by grace, we have to father by grace, and pray to be faithful as the Lord gives us faithfulness in this incredible task. And, the further you look into this, the deeper it gets. And you start looking at fatherhood and you say, I know that fathers have particular responsibilities. I know even in this very confused culture, this is where Brad Wilcox is helpful. Still, in most homes, dad's expected to be the provider. And if dad isn't the provider, there isn't provision. Dad's expected to be the protector. If there isn't protector dad, there isn't protection. Dad is expected to be there. And still, even as the feminists have been undermining fatherhood, and even as fathers have been abdicating fatherhood, and even as the media has been marginalizing it, in my article I talk about fathers being the object of media ridicule and laugh lines from the Berenstain Bears to the Simpsons. And you look at that and you say, even in the light of all that, even after the wash of all of that, the amazing thing is that if you talk to most kids today and you ask them what they want, and what they know they need, and what they're hungry for, it's going to be a home with a father and a mother. Because children understand they need the distinctive parenting styles of both. A couple of interesting things going on. At the Wall Street Journal this week, there's a fascinating article on the fact that moms often keep fathers from fathering, or at least disincentivize fathers from fathering, by gatekeeping. Very interesting article. And we'll provide the link to that at albertmuller.com with this radio program as well. Brad Wilcox points to it, suggesting that there are some moms who just want to take all the terrain of the child rearing for themselves. That's not right. And I want to pay tribute to my wife, Mary, who's never served as a gatekeeper to keep me from our children. But it's always been a partnership from the very beginning. There are some women who simply think that men are in the way. They won't change the diaper correctly. They won't do any number of things the way mom would have it done. Well, just remember what Martin Luther, the great reformer, told his own students. He said, angels smile when mothers change a diaper, but angels laugh when a dad changes a diaper, and angels love to laugh. So let dad do it. So what if the tape's on the wrong side? We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. It's good to talk about fatherhood, and Father's Day provides kind of a calendar opportunity for that. It's one of those holidays I kind of call a greeting card holiday, in that it's just kind of there. And most Americans treat it with great superficiality, buy dad a tie, a card, a book, or something. By the way, if you are looking for a book to get dad, I have a summer reading list with 10 books that are especially tilted towards guys, men, and dads. It makes some good gifts if you're looking for something. That might be of help. You can go to albertmuller.com and go to the Albert Mohler Program. Look at either the reading list, or you'll find that under a major blog entry there. Or you can find it just by going to the website for today's program, and we'll put it as one of the links for today. When you're thinking about Father's Day, you might think you're going to take Dad out to eat. You're going to have a special time around the dinner table to kind of celebrate Dad. You're going to present him with the cards and perhaps some gifts. You know, that's a sweet thing, but it's really sad, just as much as it is with Mothers and Mother's Day, to see fatherhood relegated to one particular day of the year. You know, I want to pay tribute not only to my father, Dick Moeller, there in Pompano Beach, Florida, who is still with us, I'm so glad to say, and I want to honor him as father. I want to give thanks for my wife's father, the late Marvin Kaler, just a wonderful man, who, as a father-in-law, became a wonderful, wonderful friend to me and was a wonderful grandchildren grandfather to his grandchildren. I also want to thank my wife for something very special that she's done for me. I don't think she would mind me mentioning it here. When the children were very, very young, she got a book, one of those books that is like a notebook, a journal. And every year for Father's Day, she had our children, as they grew older, write a message to me as father on Father's Day. And so I have a book of messages from my children on Father's Day, from the time when they couldn't write and can only kind of put a drawing on the page until they can write me two or three pages. It's really, really sweet, and I've got it not only for Father's Day, but where I can look at it 365 days a year. It was a brilliant, brilliant idea. I wish I'd come up with the same brilliant idea for Mother's Day. But that's where moms are way ahead of dads. Just remember that as you're looking at this whole big question about fatherhood, you can start. And that's one of the most important, perhaps, take-home messages, unexpected from today's program. You heard two callers, Sanford and John, both call in men who do not have dads, who are now seeking to be the right kind of dads for their children. So just remember, even if you, looking backward, see absence or abuse or tragedy, you can look forward and see faithfulness. Let's help to aim each other at that. I'll meet you tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. Monday and Tuesday, we're going to be on the floor of the Southern Baptist Convention meeting here in Louisville, Kentucky. It's going to be a fascinating time, and we'll see you then. God bless you.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.